Welcome to Rewilding Love. This season is with a couple on the brink of divorce.
This is episode number 47, an interview with Tanner Zagarino.
It either could be scary or it's exciting, is that there's never going to be a point where you're going to reach the finish line.
You kind of saw this understanding straight away and you could see how helpful it would be. And then you were able to sort of pick it up and apply it to all these different areas of your life where you may be experiencing challenge.
Why is my analytical machinery seems like it can control my life?
Our experience is coming from inside of us. Our nervous system, our mind is naturally going to make that shift and come back into balance.
It was like Scooby-Doo. These thoughts or like these like anxieties were like a scary monster.
It's getting into that flow state, because I imagine when you get into the flow state, that's when it's really impactful. It stops looking like something that's scripted. It starts to look like real life.
If you don't try to pull the controls back and you just let go and do like self-nurturing, it will come back to equilibrium.
There's that deeper intelligence within us, but the brain responds to that. So the form of our brain, the form of our nervous system is informed by that deeper intelligence.
You are listening to Rewilding Love with me, Angus Ross.
And me, Rohini Ross.
Rewilding Love is a podcast about relationships.
We believe that love never disappears completely in relationships. It can always be rewilded.
Relax and enjoy the show.
So in today's episode, we are talking with Tanner Zagarino. And Tanner has been a client of mine for some time now. And one of my favorite clients, I hasten to mention.
What if your other clients are listening?
Well, I have lots of favorite clients.
Okay.
I definitely do have a lot of favorite clients. Probably I shouldn't say that. but I do. I do love Tanner. He's amazing. And right from the get-go, I just think that he saw a lot in terms of what I was sharing around this understanding. And it's really been amazing to watch his life unfold in really cool ways, where in him being able to harness this understanding and see it unfold for him in ways that get him to have a different experience that I feel involves less suffering, less anxiety, and a willingness just to be really present to whatever situation he finds himself in, both, you know, on the relationship front and on the career front. So he's just been very inspiring to me, and it's been a real joy to work with him.
Well, it was wonderful having him to our home. He's our first podcast guest that's come to our home, which is really lovely. And I'll let you do his bio.
Okay. Well,
what's wrong?
No, that's I don't know. It's funny because I feel like you're always really good at keeping things on track. And, you know, I gave you my little opening salvo, and obviously I should have included a bio in that. So cleverly done. I just want to applaud you out loud. Yeah, so Tanner, in terms of his bio, when I first started working with him, he was very new to acting. And so what's been so wonderful about the road that he's been on is that his acting career is really coming on leaps and bounds. So it went from a few little parts to, you know, now he's had a big role in a movie. And I feel tremendously proud of the journey that he's been on. So first and foremost, he is an actor, and he's really passionate about his craft. And he's got some really interesting things to say about that. I don't really want to list off the things that he's done. I just want to just to let you know that he's a working actor. And it's really interesting to hear him talk about how he applies this understanding to his craft. And, you know, obviously that's not the only thing that we're going to be looking at here, but he certainly takes a stab at that. And I think you'll find it interesting.
But before we go into the episode, I thought of a story, because Tanner said that, you know, you're not an actor. And I immediately thought of how you nearly became an actor.
I did not nearly become an actor. I didn't nearly become an actor. I mean, I tried to become an actor.
Why don't you share that with our listeners?
I know you. I just knew you were going to bring that up as soon as you started talking, going in that direction. So At some point.
Well, for one second, where did you even get the idea that you might want to be an actor? Like, where did that even come from?
I think I had some sort of vague aspiration at some point to become an actor. I don't know. I guess a lot of people. I don't know. I did. I assume other people do too. Through the course of their life. I don't think I'd really fought it through, and I hadn't done any acting at this point. And then I think, I don't know who I heard this from, but there is a great Shakespearean actor and great television actor called John Thor, who was in my favorite TV show, I think I was in my teens, called The Sweeney. And I'd heard that he had only started acting at the age of 30, that he'd gone to RADA at 30 as a mature student. I guess that's a mature student. Seemed pretty young to me at my old age. but I think I was 25 at the time, 24, 25. I think I was 25. And so I decided that I would audition at RADA, which is a very world-renowned acting academy in London.
How did you get an audition there? Was that difficult?
Yeah, so I went through the regular channels. In those days, they didn't have the internet or anything like that. You had to write to them or fill in a form or do something. I think you fill in a form. I can't remember. Anyway, I filled in a form. There had to be an accompanying letter, I don't think. I filled in the form and they got back to me pretty quickly saying, no, thank you, not today. So I actually wrote a letter back, thinking of all the things that I could say to convince them they need to give me an audition. And I guess that letter was fairly convincing because lo and behold, I got an audition. And it's almost laughable now to think what I felt like would be an appropriate audition in terms of what I would choose, what play. And I guess I had to choose a play, and I chose Macbeth. And this is where it gets funny, because I did the dagger scene. You know, is this a dagger I see before me?
Why is that so funny?
Because what was I thinking? What an incredibly hard thing to do. Like no acting chops whatsoever. And I'm trying to take on one of the greatest roles of all time. And then some obscure play, which I can't even remember. what it's called now. And that's what's funny. I'm actually now remembering that actually the first part of this whole experience of going to RADA is that all the people that were auditioning that day all gathered together in one room with the principal of the academy. And then he started just randomly going through the list. And I think I was just maybe one of three people out of this room. And there was quite a lot of people there who he picked on and asked me what play I was planning to do. And I couldn't remember. I was so freaked out.
Forgot you were doing Macbeth.
Well, actually, I don't know if it was that I was freaked out. This is the other thing I have to be completely transparent about. I think because I was a little bit nervous, I bought a half bottle of scotch and drank it in the bathroom in the hotel across the street before I went in there. So I think I was pretty half cut by that point. But it just was.
Wait a second. What size is a half bottle of scotch?
I don't know. What is it? Is it half a pint or something? I didn't drink the whole thing, obviously, but I had probably half of that. I don't know. I just wanted to take the edge off, but maybe I went a bit too far. I don't know. And I was 25, was much younger then. I get into the audition. Well, I get into the building, and this is the first experience. I'm like, can't even remember what play supposed to be performing for my audition. And if that was, it was such a shambles. And then finally, you know, I did that, and I just remember just feeling mortified, and it was embarrassing. And the worst thing about it, one of the things that it's funny actually, I just saw it recently in some TV show. They have a couple of people on the panel, one of which is this principal, who's probably by this point, this guy is a dead loss. One of them is the principal, and then I don't know who the other person was. And then this other person who's there primarily and only actually, she's there to give prompts. So if you forget your lines, she gives you a prompt. And I guess you're supposed to ask for it. And I think you're given that information before the audition begins. And this woman is a famous TV actor. So I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I was a little starstruck or a little bit put off, but this is the person that was going to help me through this whole process should I forget what I was going to say.
Which is pretty likely since you can't remember the play that you're doing.
And the fact is, it wasn't as bad as, is this a prompt dagger before me? But it was almost that bad. And I think I probably asked for it about 3 or 4 times in the delivery of these lines. And so it was just, I mean, now it's a fun story and it's kind of laughable that I went through that. But at the time, it was pretty embarrassing. But yeah, that was the beginning and the end of my famous acting career.
And did they tell you on the day or did they write you a letter?
I think I knew.
They didn't even bother.
I can't remember. I cannot remember. I think they did tell you on the day, yeah. And they did this thing where out of all the people that were there, only one person was asked to come back and deliver. They wanted her to perform another play, and they gave her something to learn in the, you know, right there and then on the spot.
Oh, wow.
And then she had to go back in. I don't know, maybe there are other people there who did a good job, but we all thought that was a good sign that, you know, then maybe that's part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is kind of a funny story.
It is. It wasn't funny at the time.
No, at least you have perspective. But it really also highlights that acting is not an easy craft.
No, it's really not. And I think, you know, we take a look at a couple of things in this conversation, which allows us to sort of look at it from a different vantage point and you know, some of the difficulties and how you might find yourself coping with them maybe too.
Yeah, and I thought Tanner did a really great job of exploring how this understanding has helped him in his work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's a good one.
All right, should we go to the episode?
Yes, let's do that. Tanner, welcome. So good to see you. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. This has been quite the journey to set this bad boy up, but we're here. And this is actually my first time ever meeting Rohini. It was so great to meet you, by the way. I've been seeing Angus for about, it's almost a year now.
Yeah, in a professional sense.
In a professional sense. Yeah. We've been seeing each other.
This isn't a polyamory relationship podcast.
This is actually what this meeting is about, Rohini. Oh, yeah. We need to tell you something about... I haven't seen him in a professional sense for about a year now. And we just created a really great friendship, which is more or less what this is. There's never like, and the best part why I stuck around, I've seen, you know, I went to see like the traditional therapy route when I was younger. And this is funny. I hardly think about this, but I went through like the traditional therapy route when my parents split up, and I just found it like this weird, no, the power thing was weird in the sense that it was always like, we know what's wrong with you and we're going to fix you. But the great thing about getting to know you, Angus, and the relationship we've created is that it's been such like equals helping each other. Mm. And it's been like more of a friendship and like, just like, hey, we're both like, like I'm 60 something years old, you're 22, we're both like still in the same, like, you know, or still have the same North Star. So I guess my introduction would be, I mean, that was a big roundabout way of saying it, is that I've been seeing Angus professionally for about a year now, and I was a big proponent of you guys starting this podcast. I always told you that I thought this was a great idea.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me be the first live guest.
Fantastic.
And I just was like, that was it. I was like, I want to be the first live guest because I've been on live podcasts. I find them very fun. And I always thought that our conversations were like, you know, there was a point where we got to where I wasn't really, you were like, Tanner, you're not really having that much, many problems. Like, there's like not really much going wrong with your life right now. We just come and chat. And I'm like, yeah, but I think the things that, and it's not work. I don't like the work in any sense of like, even like through like what I do, it's like the work. It's not like I'm like maintaining something like it or it'll fall apart. Mm-hmm. It's just I find the conversations to be pushing me more towards that North Star of like mm-hmm. that's, you know, the rewilding, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's where that's my introduction.
Yeah, fantastic.
And I'm 22.
I think you might have said that I was 22 and you were in your 60s.
Exactly.
Which I guess it's obviously glaringly obvious how that was incorrect.
Yeah.
I always think about, you know, we learned from the Pranskys. We did an apprenticeship with the Pranskys that kind of introduced us to this understanding. And George would always say in the way that you might work with people, you want to treat it like it's us girls sitting together having a chat. He would always say that, us girls sitting together having a chat. So it's obviously meant to be very informal. But I do have a few clients that I've seen for a few years now, and I feel like I do at times wonder why, you know, well, they look like they're doing really well. Maybe they're even doing better than me. It's like, how come they still want to continue? And I think that to do it on that level and for us to sit together and have a conversation where we are, you know, there is a very level playing field. We are equals, obviously. And in having that and sitting down, having a conversation like us girls, I guess, but with the pursuit of that North Star of understanding, let's say, is that I feel like there's always that opportunity to have an insight. And it's two people kind of on that journey together.
And that doesn't end.
And it doesn't
end. That's why when people are like, have you reached the finish line? There's never a finish line for me. And like for what we talk about, it's that every time there's a new... It's like a new opening of a new thing that you didn't realize that you had, or even opening of something that maybe you're lacking in.
Yeah.
And it's just life, you never become, and I think that's a hard understanding to really become concrete with. And like, it either could be scary or it's exciting, is that there's never going to be a point where you're going to reach, you know, the finish
mm-hmm.
line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's never going to be like, I'm the most grounded, humble version of myself ever. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and there's always something new to learn and see. It's kind of like, I don't know, I think of an athlete, it goes on a playing field. They're probably like wanting to have that moment where they see something new, or they can have a new move or a new way to play. And I feel like, you know, that's kind of like what the conversations are. It's like we're looking for something new and fresh, and that's when it gets exciting.
Yeah, it's been really, really exciting for me. And it all started from a place where I was like having a hard time with my girlfriend. And I was in a place of desperation to just like, I was like, you know, I was really caught up and I was really in like a really analytical perspective of like this closed loop, as we talk about, and this ruminating around like, I need to, like, I have a problem. I need to work on this. Like, and it was more or less like my temper, or I don't remember where it was starting from. I just knew that the relationship wasn't working. And sometimes those type of, you know, they thrust you through the door of like ready to like be open to a new understanding. And then it took on a whole different, you know, a whole different direction for me. But yeah, it was really interesting to see, like, I came from a place of where I didn't really, I just wanted to find answers to like, why am I getting so caught up? Why am I so anxious all the time? Why is my analytical machinery seems like it could control my life? Where I come from a place where I would have these like moments of profound clarity where I didn't know how to articulate it, of like, I feel so good right now. I don't know how to even describe this. I don't know. It was more or less, I feel so good and I'm happy and I don't know where it's coming from, but I don't want to let it go. And then there'd be moments of I'm so caught up. I literally feel like I'm a prisoner of my own mind and I don't know how to make this go away. And the understanding, I guess, like through, I guess, the whole girlfriend thing and then getting thrusted into, you know, wanting to find an answer for why I can't, you know, the balance there is, or like the balance of understanding that I'm not trapped by my mind, nor are those times just coming through my life without any control. Like I can bring them, you know, it was fascinating. And long story short, I found such a different journey of that it wasn't, I didn't need, like, the girlfriend was just like a, you know, the first thing that fell along, like the domino mm-hmm, effect of mm-hmm. what's going to come next.
Kind of the entry point to the conversation.
Yeah. And it was, it was really fascinating for me to find out, like, through the understanding with Angus, that, like, I just kind of took the mask off. And that's the way I described it. And the best way I could articulate it is, like, it was, like, my thoughts, whether, like, I was getting caught up or with my just analytical and, like, the closed loop, like, we talk about through, like, the algorithm that we bring ourselves. It was, like, in, like, Scooby-Doo, was that these thoughts or, like, these, like, anxieties were, like, a scary monster. And I could take the mask off it, and it was all up to me. And I could be like, Mr. Jenkins, it's you, you know? And that's like the, and that was the metaphor I'd always use for that thoughts are like, you, and it's a lot of personal responsibility too, which is hard, where it's like, I have no point fingers to point besides at myself. Like, I'm going to get through this you know?
Yeah. That can be the hard part, but it's also the great part too. That it is on us in a sense, and that I think what makes that easier is that our natural design is always going to take us in the direction of stabilizing and settling. So even though it's coming from our experience is coming from inside of us, that our nervous system, our mind is naturally going to make that shift and come back into balance at some point.
Yeah. And like that plane metaphor that you guys both probably use, I just found to be like, it's like sometimes you hear something in life that can just settle you. And that like settled me, where it was like, if you try to hold on to the controls of a plane as it goes down, you're going to sit there and like white knuckle it. And that's what it's more or less with like problems, or like problems is so vague, but more or less like anxieties and stress and just ruminating thoughts was what it was for me.
Yeah.
It was like the fear of failure, you know, the fear that I've just moved out to LA and I want to be an actor and is just going to work. And that closed loop of like negative thinking, I realized that I was just trying to like force myself, like white knuckle. Don't think that. When you realize, if you go, oh, my brain, like the plane, if you don't try to pull the controls back to bring it and you just let go and do like self-nurturing and take care of yourself, it will come back to equilibrium. And it's like more trust in yourself, which is what I think, if in a roundabout way of all like the bullshit that I just said, but like, and like that, it's the trust in yourself and in your own consciousness that it'll come back to equilibrium.
Yeah.
And when you don't trust yourself and then you start trying to like force it, it's like trying to fit a square peg in a circle hole. It's like it can morph and it can happen as long as you don't try to force it. And the forcing is what, you know, that's how people get so caught up and so stressed and, you know.
It magnifies everything when we're trying to force it.
Yeah, it's the taking the hands away and be like, I'm not in control of this, and that's okay, which is such a hard concept to really get grounded with.
And for those that may have not heard the plane metaphor before, I'm sure they have, is that there is this aeronautical principle where if you find the aircraft getting into a tailspin, which would be analogous with us getting caught up, you're supposed to let go of the controls, and the intelligence in the design of the aircraft will actually cause it to stabilize. So it's like it's a great metaphor.
Would you say it's the brain, or would you say it's something deeper, like your spiritual side rather than the brain?
I'll let you answer that one.
Well, I would say that there's that deeper intelligence within us, but the brain responds to that. So the form of our brain, the form of our nervous system is informed by that deeper intelligence.
Yeah. It's all one. It is not either or.
Yeah. But that's a great question.
Because that, like we said, like there's never a finish line. Like you have this understanding and then something you don't expect happens and you find yourself white knuckling problems again rather than letting them find their way out. And I try to repeat to myself these metaphors, and sometimes you feel so clogged, you know? It's like you're in a fog, and like you can't see the clarity that you had before.
Yeah.
Or the clarity of when you're in a good mood, or the clarity when you have like a talk with either of you guys, which I find to be like, you know, an instant like a Claritin. You know? In those settings, how would you guys, in those moments of the fog where you know, where like it's almost like your brain won't even let you accept those as reality, accept the fact that if I take my hands off the controls, I'll come back to peace, which is more or less what it is peace. And you want to find, because you just feel the panic to start to ensue, and the panic that of, you know, which I think is, it's almost like when you smoke too much weed when you're younger. It's like, I'm never going to not be high. This is just forever. I'm going to be feeling like looking at my hands and not understanding why they feel like this forever. And that's like the, like that type of, and like it, and like a caught up state like that, where you're, everything in your body's heightened, you're completely analytical, and you're, all you're doing is focusing on trying to fix this problem. In those moments, is it just to like embrace that you're feeling that pain or that anxiety? Because you can't alleviate it by going get fix yourself now. Mm-mm. Is it almost like you have to lean into it, and then it'll almost go through it like a storm?
I mean, I think that's a great way of talking about it, how the feelings just do naturally move through us. But when you describe that experience, what's so hard about it is that we get so caught up that we tend to get scared. And in that fear, we tend to resist our experience. And so one of the things that I find helpful is remembering it's not going to always be this way, like you're saying.
Because you can get so caught up and be like, well, has it always been this way? And I've just been lying. It's like the closed loop of anxiety, like picking at your scabs. Yeah. Which is such a gross metaphor. I'm sorry, but like it's like anxiety picking at a weak point in your brain, and it's obviously it's something you have to take the power away, take the mask off in Scooby-Doo. You know, that's like the, I don't know why I made that metaphor came to me, where it's like this whole metaphor of the show is that you're hunting down this thing, you're trying to figure out who this ghoul is, and you take it off, and it's just like your next door neighbor. Like, that's not scary at all. And like, thoughts can dress up as whatever they want to, but at the end of the day, they're just thoughts.
That's right.
And they're just what you make them. I thought about this the other day. It's like, they're never going to not be there, you know? And that's usually the problem, is that like, and for me, is that I was always like, I just want them to go away forever. It's the fact that you can walk by them and eventually not even give them attention.
Yeah.
And then when you don't give them attention, it's like their fuel is the attention you give them.
Exactly.
And like eventually they're just sitting there like these like sad people at like a like walk-in horror park. They're like trying to scare you, and they're just like, this doesn't even work anymore. And they're like smoking cigarettes, and they're just like bored because they don't have any power to you anymore.
It sounds like you and Angus have been doing some good work together. The point that you made, like that's a really profound point, to understand that our thinking's never going to stop. The goal isn't for anxious thoughts to not be there, because if that becomes the goal, we get into that loop of control,
you
like
fall
you're saying.
Off a brick. It's like, that's why like the Einstein quote of like, it's the helper. Like without the analytical anxious thoughts, you would walk into oncoming traffic. Right. There's a reason you have some things that make you feel fear.
Yes.
It's because it's an instinctual adaptation to for survival.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
But there's also, you know, it can take, it's really easy for that part of yourself for you to think that that's just your being.
Yeah. You can get really gripped by them at times, and that's when we really suffer. But when you get to that point that you describe where the thoughts can come, even a certain amount of identification with the thinking can happen, and you can have even a little, you know, some of those feelings come up, but when it's no longer a big deal to you, when you understand that, oh, this is just the normal human experience that everybody is having, there's nothing wrong with you specifically, we all have the same thing, then it becomes really neutral. Like you're saying with that example of the people in the horror park just standing around with cigarettes, it's like, it doesn't grip you in the same way. And even when you do get gripped, you know that it's just a temporary feeling that at some point you're going to see that it is just Mr. Jenkins.
Yeah. And like, you're going to get through that dark cloud, and it's going to be sunny on the other end. And it always is. And that's that type of trust in yourself, which I think is more or less what it is. And that's, if I found anything, is like the, even if you don't really feel it, if you don't feel that trust in yourself, just, it's like almost like just like, it's like a mantra where I'm just like, you know that this is all going to blow past and everything's going to be okay. It's like, we talked about this. I did a mushroom trip last year. It was about a year ago, last December. It's been over a year since we've been seeing each other professionally. So I was having a hard time after it. I was profound, and it wasn't like a happy thing. It was more of like, I was having like a confrontation with like, what does fear mean to me? And it was like a really profound experience. And it was, I got a little sick. And then and then afterwards I was thinking about like, you know, my brain's coming back from something, you know, I'm bouncing back from something, but it's in, if I drew this metaphor, or not this comparison, where if I bruised my knee, would I be scared that I'd never be able to walk ever again? If I bruise my knee and I have a limp for a couple of days, do you think I would have a full-blown breakdown thinking I'm never going to be able to use my leg ever again? No, you trust that your body's going to heal itself. And in that same, you know, from that same place, why don't we have that for our mental health or for our, you know, spiritual side or for our brains? Why, when I'm feeling down or when I'm feeling anxious or I'm feeling panic, do I not think the same way as I do about my knee? Is that I trust that my body has all my, I'm built for adaptation. I'm built to adapt. I'm built to, you know, to heal itself. Yeah. And that just that sentence like changed my life, I think. Where I was, and especially after that moment where I was feeling like super cagey, and the next days I was just like dissecting what happened the night before and trying to figure it out, and using like all my, even after I have been doing this with you, with Angus for so long, I would still like afterwards, like analytically trying to like, where does that fit in my life? Where does that puzzle fit for like where I need to work on this thing? And I was having such a hard time trying to answer those questions that probably couldn't be answered, and that's okay. But I was feeling, you know, sick. I was feeling like I was in a low mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and then like, why if I bump my knee and do I just not even care? I'll even walk on it and not care. I'll go work out on it and not care because I know I'm going to get healthy again. I know my body is going to bounce back. But with my brain, I didn't have that same trust until, you know, and I'm still working on it, you know.
Yeah.
But that trust in your consciousness is really, really like paramount.
It's life-changing.
It's life-changing. It really is. Yeah. And then you start having anxiety about not having anxiety. And then it's like this thing again.
What's happening?
It's just the human experience.
I want to just say, and I guess we probably should have said this at the beginning, I feel so proud of you for how far you've come over, I don't know what period of time it is, over a year since we've been working together. You know, initially you were suffering from anxiety, and I think right across the board, that's really, you know, when you really get down to it, that's what people are generally, you know, working with us for, to help us, to, for us to help them through that. And then, you know, I feel like then there were other things that cropped up. So you kind of saw this understanding straight away and you could see how helpful it would be. And then you were able to sort of pick it up and apply it to all these different areas of your life where you may be experiencing challenge. And there was challenges on the relationship front. And all along, you know, I think there would be an ebb and flow where there would be challenge. But I love the way you started to see how you could relate this understanding to your work. Mm-hmm. And we had great conversations about your work. And I always found those really exciting to see how you got enthusiastic and could see how it was so relative to your work.
Yeah. Well, so just to go more specific. So I'm an actor and I met Angus pretty much at the beginning. I think I hadn't even shot my first film yet.
No, I mean, I think when you first came to see me, I didn't necessarily know that you were an actor.
Trying to be an actor, yeah.
So, I mean, that's why I feel, you know, you've really come so far in all that you've achieved in a very short period of time. You know, I don't know how many conversations we're in before I suddenly realized, oh, yeah, you know what? Tanner is an actor. And he's really serious.
This guy talks about movies a lot.
And he's really serious about that. And obviously you were doing acting classes. But, you know, I feel like I was there right at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, look what you've done since. You've done some amazing things.
It's crazy because I had these moments on set reflecting about conversations we'd had. Where I was on set and I was FaceTime and we had a Zoom on set, one session while I was shooting this last movie. And I remember sitting down with you, looking over Topanga Canyon and going, I can't wait for one day when I'm on set and we have like a session and like I Zoom you from my hotel room. And that actually like manifested itself. And I'm not sure if the whole manifestation thing, we both have had like I don't think like, I can manifest a $100 bill to show up on the sidewalk and I'll walk by and be like, oh my God, I thought of this and it came. But I think that, you know, having that faith in yourself, that energy comes in your work and it comes across to people. It makes people want to work with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's like where I think manifesting finds its place.
Yeah.
But so back to what you're saying with my work, and with acting. So in the beginning of acting, I always had the craft itself I found to be so mysterious, as we all do. You know, we look at people like, you know, Joaquin Phoenix and, or Heath Ledger and all, or like, or any of these amazing performances, you go, how do they do it? Like, they transform, and there's no like book, there's no rules. It's not like carpentry where you can see, like, you can see, well, then they sand that edge and then they do this. It's like so mysterious. It's all in your head. And from beginning of acting, I was so fascinated in that, but it was such a question that I couldn't answer until, and I, as someone who never acted before, really, have you, Angus?
No.
Never. He was just like, well, it sounds to me, and this was something through athletics, and I wrestled my whole life into college, and I had so much deep anxiety about performing and losing, and I was an anxious kid. I really was, and I had a lot of, I don't know when it started. I liked it, and this is, I was thinking about this the other day. I think it started like after my parents split. I started having panic attacks about my dogs running away. Things that I couldn't control, you know, because I guess I couldn't control that, perhaps, maybe is where it stemmed from. But I used to have these really intense panic attacks about, like, I can't see my dog. Is she in the backyard? And I'd have to keep, I'd check at five, like 20 times a night. I wouldn't be able to sleep because I keep checking if the dog was there. But so I through the understanding of like sports and through even like through being anxious about like, how does this stuff work? How does people perform? And how do people like show up and like with like just like fun and this energy and not be thinking about the consequences or what's going to happen later or what's going to happen before or how people are going to think about me if I do a bad job? What's going to happen with like, will people even like me? Will girls like me? Will everything crumble if I fail? And I, with acting, especially even the craft itself, and with wrestling, it was like that my whole life. I had never got to enjoy it. It was more just a weight off my shoulders when I would win. And I won a lot, but it was just be like a relief that I didn't, it didn't, my identity didn't get crumbled by this loss, because it was all of it was riding on this whole thing. And then through talking with Angus about acting and like exploring that and like almost starting to feel that anxiety again through that craft itself. And I'm like, oh no, now I'm choosing a career. It's going to make me feel this way too. And he just one day turned to me, he's like, it sounds like the best you've ever seen anybody perform or any of the people that you watching, you are just like, how do they go there? It's a zone state. You're not thinking, you're just completely present and you find that flow state. And I'm like, and it just clicked. I was like, every time I ever wrestled my best, anytime I've ever been my best, anytime I've had the best conversations, anytime I've ever acted my best was when I just did the work, left at the door and just showed up presently and just flowed. And it's something that's so, you know, it sounds so like meta and like hard to understand, but every person listening to this, and including you guys, we all know that moment where we just were like, was that an hour? Like, I felt like 2 minutes. I was just flowing, just having so much fun with you guys. And like, that's was like a groundbreaking moment in my acting where I was like, I'm just going to do my work and I'm going to trust my body. I'm going to trust myself and I'm going to show up and let the acting gods take over. And I'm going to show up present and be a vessel for this thing, for this expression. And that's like changed my life. And I wish I could go back in time to when I was an athlete and just show up and be like, I've done all the work. I'm going to show up and not punish myself about what's going to happen after or what happens before. I'm just going to show up and be present and let the wrestling gods take over in that instance. And that's like such a weird way to put it. It was just like a funny way for me to explain it to myself and like have that, like, you know, really like put a picture of that understanding is that I'm going to show up and I'm going to find that flow state somewhere. And I may lose it for a second. I'm not going to punish myself for losing it. Because in the middle of a scene, I'll be like, why are my nails so long? That wasn't... And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, I'm supposed to be playing like this character and I'm thinking about the dirt under my nails. What the fuck? Uh-huh. And then you can do that for the rest of the scene and punish yourself and get so not present and start thinking, punishing yourself for those moments. Or you can let those moments drift by you. Like, I used to have this metaphor with you too. It's the best way with it, this understanding only works through metaphors, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Yeah.
But the metaphor was, is that it's like a car driving by and trees going by a car as you're driving. Like, you can pull over and stare at that tree for as long as you want, or you can let that tree come through your horizon and then past your peripheral and then flow past you. And like, just like those moments of losing that flow state or losing that presence, it can fly past you just like that. You can get right back into it. Yeah. And that lack of punishing yourself for those moments and realizing that that's the juice behind all great art and maybe behind all great moments in my life.
Yeah.
And I know that's a very, that all great, greatest moments in my life have come from that. That's the juice behind life, is those flow states.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's conversation, whether it's sports, whether it was acting for me, it's changed my life for like where I want to be always. Obviously you need the helper. You need that analytical mind to like, you know, get you to those places. But when you're there, I just drop everything at the door and I show up. And it was like groundbreaking when you said that to me, because it like, it's so true. And anybody who ever does anything knows it too.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that they enjoy, any form of art, which is such a vague term. Art is anything that you create and people can be a part of. I'm not even sure if it needs to be inclusive. Art's just something you create.
Yeah.
Anything that you create to find that flow state where you lose yourself, lose your, you know, become like, it's like you're like, and it is the evaporation of like your ego.
Mm-hmm.
And you become like, you lose the self and you become the collective. And it's like, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. It's actually completely changed my life, and it gets me so excited just talking about it right now.
I get so
excited talking about it, because I've realized it's like, makes me like, I'm doing it right now with you guys. Like, I didn't know what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just here flowing with two people that are like bouncing back and forth like ping pong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and those are the best moments of life.
And absolutely.
Those other moments of having to buckle down and be like very analytical should only be to get you back to those moments. They're like the steps to get to like the next floor of where you can just like coast for like ride that wave forever. If I could ride that wave forever, it's like, you know, you always think about like those monks that like move to, you know, Tibet and like live there forever. And I wonder if they're just riding that presence wave. They found it and they're like, this is where I feel it always. I will live the rest of my life in this presence always. And obviously those are different choices that I'm making. I choose to see Angus professionally.
That's going to be the title for this podcast.
Tanner's professional relationship with Angus.
I think there's something really interesting about the acting game. I'm not an actor, so I can only imagine all the ways that it must be so fascinating and interesting. But there's that sort of understanding that you get into a flow state, which how I'm fascinated by that is because ultimately you're given a script that you have to learn and you have to deliver. So you kind of have to show up, you have to deliver the script, but you also got to do it in a way where it looks natural and it's getting into that flow state. Because I imagine when you get into the flow state, that's when it's really impactful. And then it stops looking like something that's scripted. It starts to look like real life. Like we as an audience are all really sucked into it because it looks so authentic. And I always heard actors talking in the past. I've heard a couple of actors talking about, oh, yeah, that's a really honest performance.
Honest. They always use the word honest.
They do. And I never knew really what that meant. But I'm wondering if it's something.
They're not lying.
Right.
What am I talking about? What an obvious thing to say.
But it's kind of like they're not lying in the way where how do you get beyond what, you know, there is the script. You have to deliver those lines. You have to learn those lines and deliver those lines. But you've got to do it in such a way that it's entirely believable. So you kind of got to get beyond. It is kind of like a meta state. How do you define or describe it?
That's why I found myself before this understanding being so confused by it all, especially going to acting class and putting up good scenes and not understanding what I did to make it good, not understanding what I... Because you're right. Like you are within this script. You're within...
Yeah.
There's parameters. There's a box that you can't color outside that box. But like... It's almost like it's a box like this, and in both those directions, it's going infinite.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a box where this is the box, but you only can't go out there. You can go in or out as much as you want, you know? And it's funny because like we say, like obviously the Einstein quote where the analytical brain is the helper, like I could never figure out the character without being analytical. You need to go do research.
Exactly.
You have to go figure out what their family was like. You have to understand their what drove them to go to find themselves in this situation. How can you relate to that? How can you, and that's all about really what I find it is, it's relatability. And that relatability, I find, doesn't need to come through like me like having a bunch of things on each side, like we have this in common and like drawing lines to each other. It happens in that flow state.
Yeah.
So that flow state comes from so much. You drop the ego and you drop the self and you become part of the collective. And within that collective, you and that character find each other.
Yeah.
Wow. I've never really put it that way before. And I found that to be very truthful when it came out, is that in that flow state, you and that character find each other. And you, in that moment, it doesn't happen really before. You can do all the work, you can do all the studying, you can do all the imagining yourself in those situations, but until you get up there and they say action, or you know the scene starts on stage in acting class, in that flow state, in that collective where you drop yourself and you lose your ego, you and that character really find each other.
That's amazing.
And it's like, and I had an acting coach say this to me once, because there's always this thing to lose yourself in the character. And he was like, never do that. And I'm like, what? And it blew my mind. I was like, what do you mean? And he said, as soon as you lose yourself in the character dies. And I was like, I was just like mind blown. I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, you're the only thing with life. You're the only thing with experiences. You're the only thing that you, the only vessel you have through understanding is through you. You need to bring your, you need to find yourself in the character, not lose yourself in the character. Because the only thing you can bring that to life is through your own experiences. Just like if I did some, it's being dishonest when you lose yourself. Because the only way you can be honest is to come through you. The only way I can be honest, even when I'm playing someone like a fucking murderer, is to sadly find some dark part of you that could see if things happened weirdly in your life and things, you could see that being someone being capable of something like that. And it's empathy.
Right.
It's really seeing their circumstances and seeing their emotional innocence. And this understanding of seeing someone's emotional innocence has lent itself so much to my work. And the fact that people who just can't relate to something, like I found through this, when you see someone's emotional innocence, you can relate to anyone. It's lent itself so much to what I do. And I think, and I don't think it's just for acting out there, people.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, I think acting is a good thing to draw this parallel. But I think with anything in any work, anything in life, you can draw the parallel of like seeing someone's emotional innocence, being able to find those flow states. It's just like, it gets me like, I start getting like choked up thinking about it. Cause it's like, I think about like all the people I love that don't have this understanding and I want them to have it so bad. And then I try to force it. And then I become a, I try to force it upon them and I can't.
No.
I'm like, think like this. And, it just has never worked ever. It's like a Bible thumper.
Yes.
But I'm coming from a place totally different. And it's so hard. And then that's when you have to, once again, have and learn another lesson. Like we talk about, like I never stop learning. And that's why it's like, oh, you're doing so well. Why are you still, you know, because I'm never going to stop learning.
There was something that I wanted to say, which I think is really exciting. That's about this conversation. And I think that for me, in learning this this understanding and doing this work for however many years that we've been doing it now, and like you're right, there's always something new to learn and something new to see. And I think there's been something that has been really engaging for me, probably, I don't know, it's always been engaging, but I think I'm seeing it in hopefully a deeper way now, is that there is this sort of idea that we have this personal analytical machinery, personal mind, however we label it, I don't really care. And then there's this sort of, there's this other universal mind, the intelligence behind life. Again, I don't care how we label it. And it feels like there's a sort of ebb and flow. There's a going back and forth between those two different fields. Yeah, we can of course say it's all one. But there is a sense for me that there have been these two different fields, and I kind of like being living in this ebb and flow. And so I think initially I used to think maybe there's something wrong with my analytical mind, and it's filled with problems.
And judgment for myself.
And I want to get to the universal and live there.
Oh, the harder you try sometimes, the more you just stay trapped like quicksand.
Yeah, and I just think that that's unrealistic. Obviously, duh, I don't know. It took me a long time to realize that. And all I can expect is that I'll have moments where I'll probably, you know, find myself in that flow state. And probably as soon as I'm aware that I'm in that flow state, probably I'll fall out of it and go back into analytical.
But like we say, like in those moments where you become aware, it's to not punish yourself when you become aware. Let it go by like the tree in the car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let it come. Let that moment of becoming the fingernails in the middle of a scene. Yeah. That shit happens to me all the fucking time. Yeah. It happens to me where I'll be like, oh, I'm killing it right now. And then I'll make eye contact with someone in the audience. I'll be like, oh, fuck. That's Jim. I know him. He smokes Marlboro Reds outside of acting class. Yeah, you know what I mean? And then you just like lose your presence. And then I remember I was like, I found it, and then I lost it. And then someone told me in acting class, is like, don't punish yourself for that.
Yeah.
Because the audience doesn't know. It's a selfless act. It's like, just because you lost it doesn't mean they think you lost it.
Well, that's what I think is so profound about what you're sharing, because it actually comes back to just, you know, life in general. We are going through this human experience of this ebb and flow. We have these moments of flow, and we have these moments where we're in our analytical mind. And there are times where we're facing challenge, where we get caught up in our analytical machinery. Maybe we don't notice it, maybe we do. But when we notice it, it's like we don't have to take it so seriously. And that's what you're doing in those moments when you're acting, is like, oh, I'm suddenly falling out of that flow state because you notice Jim smoking Marlboro Lights or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But you don't judge yourself. You trust that you'll come back. And that's just how it is. There's an ebb and flow to it. We can't always be in flow. We can't always be in the analytical mind. But there has to be a balance. There has to be this balance. And I'm imagining in acting, that's what you're obviously looking for. I guess that's what we're all looking for. This is maybe why we're doing this work, is to achieve that sense of balance between our analytical personal mind and our universal mind, or that is universal. And I think that's profound. And like, isn't it interesting that we have all these different careers and we have all these different things that we get ourselves involved in? Wow, acting, what an incredible opportunity to sort of see how the mind works and operates and then project that out into the big wide world.
Yeah.
As storytelling.
It's really, really amazing. I'm so lucky that I found something that I love so much and I get to do forever, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm so grateful for where I am in my career and the people that have helped me, like Angus and like acting friends that have helped me and pushed me along. And I'm just like, I also just want to put that out there. Like, I've never, like, I even find myself now where I'm home and I don't have anything coming up. I have nothing, you know, I'm in back to auditioning and it's a humble place to be. And I find myself thinking, getting upset and going, I want to work. I want to be employed. And then I realize, I'm like, dude, you're living. You just shot a movie. You did exactly what you dreamed of. You did it. Like, this is gravy, dude. Keep working hard and you're happy. You have an amazing life right now. You have an amazing family. You're not struggling right now. Like, and then I'm just like, I'm in such a happy place. I don't need work right now. I would like it. And that brings me happiness. And that's what I love to do, what I do. But to like, I found myself finding in this place recently where I was like, I want work so bad that it's making me unhappy with the fact that but then I look at my life, I'm like, everything else in my life is amazing. I'm just not working right now. You're not poor. I'm not living on the street. You know, I just shot a movie. I got the checks, you know, I'm doing okay. You know, it's like, live now. You're present right now. You're going to one day be so busy that you're not going to be able to go surf with your girlfriend 4 days a week sometimes. That's such a blessing. And I have that right now. And like, this is my first time really acknowledging that, like, because even in those moments, I get anxious and upset that I'm not working or I'm not busy. I'm not, you know, on Outer Banks. I should have been on that fucking show, guys. Like, what the fuck? No, I'm just kidding. But there's these moments I'm going to look back on. I'm never... I've already had such so many moments in my life, especially from my wrestling career and whatnot, where I'm like, God, I wish I cherish those moments more.
Yeah.
And I'm just like making a really strong decision in my life now, kind of just decided it right now, that I'm really not going to let, I'm going to let the moments, like I'm going to, I know that this, I've everything at the palm of my hands, right? I'm like 22 and I'm about to turn 23. I have a great relationship. I live in Los Angeles. I can go surf every day. I could do be with my friends and do everything I love. I have no real responsibilities besides my dog, who I love. I'm living La Vida Loca. Like, take it in, dude. Just because you're not working, you're going to be too busy one day and you're going to wish you had this time.
Yeah, yeah.
But right now, I want to be so busy. It's like this weird balance, you know?
I'm just thinking about the conversation we had before we started recording, and you were saying that how this really helped you out in a relationship. I think it was with your brother.
Yeah.
And I was really curious to hear how it's impacting you in that area of your life.
Well, it's interesting. My brother and I are like the best of friends. He's 5 years older than me. But we've always had this, it's this relationship that I found to be super difficult for me. Because I didn't feel respected. I didn't feel like he valued. And I feel like he felt the same way about me. It was a mirror. We were mirrors to each other of like, and that understanding of seeing someone's emotional innocence has helped me with him so much. And like, even recently, we got in a huge fight this week. And like, I've been there for him. He's been going through a tough time. He's had some tough, really tough shit happen to him recently.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a gangster that he'll just like keep chugging along and laughing and having fun and you know, but like, you know, I know he's hurting, and I didn't see that. I didn't take his circumstances and take it into account. I just got so mad because of like the resentment that it's me taking things personally, which is, it's not personal. You think my brother personally wants to hurt me? Like he loves me like more than anything else in the world. He would never want to hurt me. Me getting hurt is, yeah, we can sort those problems out. And if I come from a place like that, we'll always sort those problems out. But me coming from like my ego and that he needs to be punished, he needs to hear what I have to say, he needs to be reprimanded by me. Fuck that, man.
Hmm.
And I did that and I'm not proud of it, but I'm happy I did it so I can realize that it didn't work.
Hmm.
And I realized that never works. And that finger wagging, especially at my older brother, best believe he doesn't want to hear that shit, you know? And he's my best friend. He's like and I needed to come from a place of love and a place of not taking things personally. And it's such a, what is that part of
four agreements,
taking nothing personally. And that's so hard for your ego, because you want to be, and this is a hard thing to realize, but like there's some value in feeling like a victim. I've personally felt like a victim before. Like, yeah, they fucked me over. It fuels your ego.
Mm-hmm.
And the taking things personally is a crutch for you not to take personal responsibility. Which, even in situations where you personally got screwed over, it's still more effective to take personal responsibility and see what you could have done better. Because you will always become a better version of yourself. And it's not pointing blame at yourself. It's not blame. No. It's just going, what could I do better?
Yeah.
You know? It's like chipping away at like the marble. Like if you're like a statue, it's like etching at your statue rather than like breaking something else, you know? And it's something that's probably the hardest thing of this whole understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you just get, there's moments where like even your flow state takes you to a place of being reactive and being, your ego lashes out. You get angry and you snap. You say things personal. You take things personal. Because sometimes it's really hard to not take things personal.
Yeah.
But you got to take personal accountability. You got to point the finger at you. And not the point the finger at you is like, you're the villain. Yeah. Point the finger at you like, what can you do better? How can I grow? How can I stop? How can I not make this potential mistake again? Not punish yourself for the mistake. Don't rake yourself over the coals.
Exactly.
But go, okay, that happened. I didn't like that. That didn't feel good. How can I not have that happen again? Boy, is that difficult. I just see I've never met anybody who like has mastered that.
I think it's an, like you're saying, an infinite mastery. It's a little bit.
Yeah. It's just like the work we talk about. It's like anything else. But if that's your North Star, is to not take anything personally, you're heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that's an Angus quote, by the way. I have so many Angus quotes that he doesn't have.
He doesn't remember.
I'm putting them in a book and I'm going to take all of it. And you can't take it personally.
You should just say that they are our own now.
Yeah. No, I have to give credit where credit's due.
Not taking things personally, as you're saying, really helps us be on that learning curve of seeing something new and fresh. And then the other piece that I think is part of it is how when we're really not taking something personally, we really see that our internal experience is always coming from the thinking that we're identifying with. And so even if someone is doing something against us, that happens in life, but our experience, no matter what, is always coming from what we identify within ourselves. And so those times when you're seeing the emotional innocence of someone, even if they're being rude to you, if you're seeing their emotional innocence, you're not hurting, right? You're not taking it personally.
No, you are problem solving.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then you see the possibilities.
Yeah. It opens up a whole. Yeah, exactly. That was a really great way. It's like what you're personally identifying with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the hardest part about all this, and the hardest pill to swallow, is that it's a lot of personal responsibility. And that's something that people, including myself, I'm not like pointing fingers at anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm just as bad as anybody else. Mm-hmm. It's tough to take personal responsibility.
Yeah.
It's tough. I grew up in a sport where I was wrestling out there in a little singlet by myself and losing sometimes. And you literally can't blame your teammates. You can't blame anybody but yourself. And I still have problems with personal responsibility. I still, you know, find a way to feel like, you know, a victim, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a, you know, and there's obviously situations that are, you know, but the North Star of personal responsibility and not taking things personally is so, like, obviously the answer. The thing about all this understanding for me is that it just all came really obvious to me. And that's the hardest part. And the hardest part is that it's obvious. That's true.
It's too obvious, right?
It's just like, oh, it's right in front of me. Oh, fuck. You know what I mean? It was right there the whole time. Me getting mad is my problem. Fuck. Really? It's not like it's not like something I'm eating. It's not from the glucose. You know what I mean? Like, you want to figure out something that you can change physically that can, you know. But it's really, really, really something. And I'm really stoked to know this.
So yeah, so I actually wanted to share this because there's this whole thing around taking personal responsibility. And I think that when we first came to LA, when we were really struggling in our marriage, and I ended up seeing a family therapist with you, and there was this one, I don't know, did I hear it as an instruction? Maybe I did, I don't know, but I didn't like it. It was that, you know, you could be screaming blue murder at me, and I could, you know, there could be no justifiable reason for that in my head. And I'm not suggesting that you did, but this was just to give it an example, as an example. And there was some sort of directive that I felt that I'd been given, that I have to take 100% responsibility. And like, how am I 100% responsible?
Just doesn't make sense, does it?
Doesn't add up for her screaming at me. So there would be all sorts of challenges that we might have in our relationship, and I might be upset because you got angry or whatever. I don't know what the situation was. But then you would be expecting me to take 100% responsibility.
Well, as I recall the instruction, it was that we each had to take 100% responsibility for whatever the fight was.
Yeah, and I didn't like that. Especially when I felt like it was your fault. Okay, well, that was where my consciousness was at that time. But had I really, like, because I feel like this way of looking at it, where we contemplate the other person's psychological innocence, that allows me to get to a place of neutrality. That just allows me to see that, yeah, their state of mind has gone south. They are now expressing themselves from their programming and conditioning. I could probably start to have compassion around that. So for me, just, you know, if had I been given that kind of directive, it would have been so much easier to take personal responsibility in those moments. Yeah. Just being given this directive, you've got to take 100% responsibility. It's like, no way.
The percentage is hard. It's a hard thing to 100%.
Really? Yeah.
100?
Maybe sometimes 2%. I'll take 2%.
Yeah. It's tough. It's a tough figure.
50's a stretch.
Yeah.
100?
But I think what you're saying, Angus, is that that's why when we look at something from the place of understanding and the philosophical meaning behind it, then it's not just giving someone an instruction to do something. It's explaining, this is how things work. Like, our experience is created from inside of us. That means that nobody else can make us feel a certain way.
Yeah.
It's coming from the thinking we're identifying with. Like, when we understand that, then we see, like, how can we, on a feeling level, be a victim to someone else? That doesn't mean that people can't do atrocious acts and that bad things don't happen. But in terms of our experience, that is always 100% of the time coming from inside of us. And not only does that mean we're 100% responsible for our experience, but it also means that we're empowered. And that when we're suffering, we have the capacity to see that it's possible for our mind to relax and settle, and that that's within us. We don't need someone else to change.
Yeah. It's the fact that you can't, like, I'm the creator of my own well-being.
Yeah.
You know, no one can fuck with that.
Yeah. Which is really empowering.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to explain it. It's hard to stomach that, you know, especially from someone who've real, like, yeah, it's really hard, especially in relationships. Like, I've been in relationships where it's been really tough and there's been a lot of pointing fingers and finger wagging and it's really hard to see that it's that if you take care of you, that everything else will figure itself out.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, no, we need to start doing it like this because this needs to start being handled like this. You need to ask these questions this way. And you start going all analytically. It's back to the analyticals.
Yeah.
Is that you start going on the specifics when it's not specific. The issues here are never specific, especially with loved ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're never specific. They're always something's like, you know, it's what we talk about. It's the understanding that you're getting caught up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because you put the coffee on the fucking table without a coaster. It's not because of that. And we all know that, you know?
Yeah. There's always that equivalent.
Come on, you know, like that could be like a second, but like it's so much deeper. And it's hard to, you know, stomach that. And it's the ego. The ego wants to find a villain.
Mm-hmm.
The ego wants to find someone who's screwing you over.
Mm.
And boy, do I do it all the time still.
Yeah.
And I don't punish myself for that. You know, it's the same thing as you can't cry over spilt milk. You know, there's things in my past where I just really wish I didn't treat myself the way I did. Mm. And we even talked about that recently, I guess, where not only do I get upset with the way I treated others, I get upset with the way I treated myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost started like crying the other day talking with Angus about like, I feel so bad for me.
Mm.
Like it's a crazy place to be when you're feeling empathy for you.
Mm.
The way, not for you, like how I got screwed over by someone, the way I treated myself.
Yeah.
Like the way I treated myself back when I was wrestling in high school, my dad brought me to get hypnosis, sports psychiatrist. I wasn't eating. I couldn't eat. They were worried about me getting stomach ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
Of the pain and pressure that I thought that I needed to put on myself.
Yeah.
I thought no one would like me anymore if I lost.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I won the biggest thing I could in high school. I won a state title. And I'm like mad that I wasn't more proud of myself rather than feeling like I was relieved that I wasn't a failure.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that I was a champion. It was that I was relieved that I wasn't a failure.
Yeah.
And that, I feel so bad for myself, man. And that was all my ego and all my analytical machinery, just like me not knowing to not take that seriously.
Mm.
But once again, like I said, I can't cry over spilt milk. I can't go back in time and tell little 16 or 15 year old Tanner who's staying up all night with his dad, rubbing his back, crying about how he's so scared to wrestle the next day. Mm. And you go, dude, you love to wrestle. Go out there and have fun. It's not, no one cares. I mean, it's not even no one cares that you win or lose. If you show up there presently and you just show up with, find that flow state, you're going to be a beast, you know? And it was just, I can't cry over that spilled milk. All I know is that I can look forward and go, I'm just going to keep growing towards this direction, you know? Yeah. But I do sometimes cry over spilled milk.
Don't we all? It's all very human. I get bummed,
man. I get bummed about the way I acted. I get bummed about the way I treated myself, treated others.
Well, we're all doing the best that we can, no matter at what point in our life we're at. We're going to have those human moments where we get caught up, where we get reactive. And I think the less pressure we put on ourselves, it brings out more of the best in us. And that's sort of counter to our conditioning, which thinks we have to put more pressure on ourselves so that we bring out the best in us, which actually ends up with us acting more reactively.
It's a weird, it's a weird balance too. Because, you know, the old pressure makes diamonds, which may be a little bit of like a Western propaganda.
I think
so. That's really fucked with people.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can work hard and not put tons of pressure on yourself.
Absolutely.
And you can work hard and still, like, I don't know. Like, I was thinking, there's this guy, this is a weird parallel. There's this fighter, his name's Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's like the best fighter to ever fight in MMA, ever. Undefeated, 29-0, and never had a close fight. And he's like, right before the fight, he's like FaceTiming his family and messing around. His coach is like, take it seriously. This is a big pressure situation. He goes, no pressure. He's from Portuguese. But he's like, he's from Dagestan. He's like, I trained my whole life for this. There's no pressure. I work hard. I trust myself. He trusted himself. He's like, I know who I am. I'm going to go out there and do my thing. And it was like, that guy, pressure as in like, struggle, and I think struggle is important. Things need to be hard. Hardness is good. Like doing things that are difficult is hard, good, and accomplishing things is good. But pressure, I think they're different things.
That's a completely different thing.
Pressure is self-inflicted.
That's okay, a state of mind.
That's the way I can say it. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah.
Is pressure is self-inflicted. Is your ego putting this pressure on you? And hardship and difficulty, and discipline are very different than pressure.
Yeah, pressure is when we put the stakes on ourselves and feel like it's high stakes, and then we feel
keep things
scared.
Low stakes. You're going to perform the best you could. I'm now thinking like an athlete. I'm getting locked into this thought.
Good.
But the low stakes, make everything low stakes.
Yeah,
I mean, you can have like in high stakes situations, still treat them like you're playing. You'll always be the best. At least I find.
Yeah. I agree.
I never found when a high stake situation happened that if I'm like focusing on how big of a deal this is, like when I wanted to win a state title my whole life. I remember meeting state champs when I was younger and looking at them like I met Michael Jordan and being like, that's the best thing you could possibly do in the world. I can't wait for that to do that. I hope I do that one day. Not once did my in the state tournament, did I wrestle my best when thinking about all the eyes that are on me and thinking about all the pressure, thinking about all, this is the apex of my career, of my life. Realistically, of my life at that moment was the apex. You think no one competes their best or finds that flow state their best, which is what competing, it's the same thing. No one finds those states the best when they're focused on the pressure. They're just focused on the thing. You know?
Yeah.
I'm happy I found some sort of clarity within this podcast, because when I started this off, I found myself talking and not knowing where I was going.
There's been lots of clarity. Yeah.
It's so good. Just to sort of finish that thought, high stakes is just an illusion, isn't it? It's just something that we get caught up in the analytical machinery. We're not being very present. We're worrying about what's around the corner. It's part of the negative, potentially a part of the negative future fantasy that we can concoct, that we're not going to fulfill the moment that we were looking for. That
the expectations, standards and expectations.
And expectations. It gets back to that, and it's so not a part of that flow state, that where we feel all the magic and why we're doing this in the first place. is sort of taking us out of the game and getting us caught up in some imaginary moment in the future that could not look how we want it to look. Mm-hmm. Or we put all this pressure on ourselves to be how we want it to look. And that's not the way to show up in any kind of situation.
It's also important to not put pressure on ourselves, to not have pressure, because sometimes we just can't help being gripped. Embrace sometimes we it. Can't help it. That's right.
It's exactly like you talked about, like being aware that things are going to go up and down, yeah. and just being present and letting it happen to you.
Exactly.
Like you said.
Yeah. Because I think we can sometimes use the understanding against ourselves to feel like we shouldn't get caught up, or we shouldn't get reactive. We shouldn't take things personally.
I'm past this, you know?
Yeah. It's like, what? How can I be doing this? And really, that's just the normal part of the human condition. And when, like you're saying, Tanner, it's like you can either focus on it or you can let it go by like a tree when you're driving by. It's like you're going to do one or the other. It doesn't really matter. It's okay to do one or the other. We will feel differently if we're ruminating on our anxious thoughts or we're ruminating on our expectations. But at some point, we're going to stop. At some point, we're going to come back into balance. So really, like you said, it can all be low stakes.
It can all be low stakes. I just want to say thank you.
Oh.
That's the best way. Thank you guys so much. And Rahini, it's my first time meeting you, but I feel like I've known you for a long time because mm-hmm. I've just heard so much through Angus. Only great things.
In your professional relationship.
In our professional relationship. But in our personal relationship, you're the enemy. No, I just want to say thank you to you guys so much. And thank you so much for coming into my life. And you know, we joke around, we have a lot of fun, but like, truthfully, this has been like one of the best relationships I've ever had in my life.
Well, thank you
and
so
I
much.
Really mean it. Like, you're like a very, like Angus, you specifically are like a very close person to me, and I don't know what I would do without you, honestly.
Mm. Oh, well, thank
and I'm
you.
Really so happy, and like, you're like a really great male role model for me, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you.
And it's been really special. Thank you.
Yeah. Aww. I've so enjoyed our relationship and the conversations that we've had, and I feel the same way. I feel, yeah. you know, and I do. I feel so proud of you and how far you've come.
And I love to make you proud, man. It's really, it makes me so excited. And it's such a great relationship that I'm so happy that I've cultivated. My mom's really happy about it too. She always keeps repeating it to me. She's like, I'm so happy that you have Angus. She says it to me at least once a week. She doesn't know where I'd be. I'm just kidding. Hopefully I'd be somewhere good.
And I have learned so much from you too. And I think that, you know, the way that we kicked off this conversation today, you know, I feel like those conversations were always, there was always such a level playing field about it. You know, mm-hmm. you are an old soul in a 22-year-old body for sure. And I've learned so much from you. So thank you. Really appreciate you.
And Rahini, thank you so much I'm so glad to meet you too. And it's great to put a face to who I hear about all the time. But it's like, this is like such an amazing thing you guys are doing. And like sharing this understanding is so important, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, if I just really want it to get out there.
Yeah.
And I'm so passionate about it. All I do when I get drunk with people is tell them about this. That's all I do. I do it all the time. And they're like, Tanner, we get it. We got to be present. No, you don't get it. It's more about a flow state. And then it's just, I'm butchering it. But it really does come from a place that I want this to be known to people so bad. Because I just really find it as a truth.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tanner. And I love meeting you today. And I also felt like I knew you through Angus. So it was nice to be able to get to meet you in person. And I really appreciate the level of integration that you've shared with us and the depth and the grounding that you have. And no matter whether you're sharing this with people when you're drunk or not, like your living is sharing the understanding. Who you are, who you're being,
leading
is sharing
by example,
in this.
Exactly. Like you told me, I guess.
Exactly. Mm.
Yeah.
And even though your career is in acting, it's still going to come through you. And thank you so much for being part of this so that we can share
in this way. I've been dying to do this for a long time. I think you guys are awesome. And this understanding is like, it's the bee's knees.
Thank you so much for listening to Rewilding Love. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by subscribing on iTunes. and we would love for you to leave a review there.
iTunes reviews will steer people to this podcast who need help with their relationships.
If you would like to learn more about our work and our online rewilding community, please visit our website, therewilders.org.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week.